Welcome to the intersection of personal and professional development. This is Audio Motivation.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy O'Brien again from Audio Motivation. And I'm thrilled to have back with us here after quite a long time, Tony Rubleski. Tony is currently the president of Mind Capture Group. His message is designed to help people capture more minds and profits. He's an in-demand speaker who's given hundreds of presentations the past decade, a strategic business coach, a global event promoter with over 20 plus years of experience in the personal development industry. His second book in the Mind Capture series went number one in three different business categories with Amazon.com and received stunning reviews from a wide range of leaders, marketing, sales, psychology to academia, and multiple New York Times best-selling authors. Book number four in the series is titled Mind Capture, Leadership Lessons from 10 Trailblazers Who Beat the Odds and Influenced Millions. That'll be released globally in mid-2018 with New York publisher Morgan James. His work's been featured in various media outlets ranging from Toastmasters International magazine, the Detroit Free Press, the Fox TV network, ABC, the CNN radio, NPR, Entrepreneur Magazine radio. In addition, he's also served as faculty member with both the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and CEO Space International. Today, we're going to discuss the third book in the series, which was recently re-released as an anniversary edition. Tony, welcome.
Well, thank you, sir. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a few years, and keep up the good work you're doing. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, thanks a lot, and congratulations on the new book release, the new edition, and that's really what I want to pick your brain about here, because I'm dying to know why, you know, after all this time, 7 years, I think, why'd you decide to revisit your third book? What has changed between back then and now? That's a lot of things.
Well, it's a great question, Andy. A couple of thoughts come to mind is I got an email at the beginning of this year from a fan. He said, look, I've read all your books. The third book is the best by far. And I kind of thought, okay, that's the final nudge. His name is Dave Keel out of Yuma, Arizona, very successful Remax guy. I said, darn it, we're going to go back. We're going to look at this book. And Andy, it was my divorce book. It came out arguably one of the most difficult times in my life 7 years ago in the middle of a divorce. I'd been wanting to get the book out for about a year. I said, darn it, this thing has to get released finally because I'm excited. But it didn't chart real well. And the cover on the original version, I don't know if you have one, just you can tell I was not in the right frame of mind. We tried to self-publish it. And the book was really from coming off the second book, which charted very, very high on Amazon, really kind of a disappointment from what potential was not realized. So I said, look, Dave's text and his email to me were the final straw. I said, all right, we're going to go back. We're going to touch up, do a little bit of an intro note to the reader, do a new cover design, new back jacket, and really kind of, you know, dust off this book and give it a second shot. So I was excited. A lot of people that have read all the books have said, you know, that one's the one that you were like full of bravado, a lot of energy. I wouldn't say cockiness, but it was written around 2009, 2010. We had just come out of the global recession, and a lot of people were very much, and rightfully so, down. They were like, oh my gosh, what do we do now? And the book was like a kick in the brain saying, get off your butt, get moving, innovate, hustle. You know, you may have to work some different jobs while you're rebuilding your career or your company, but it's time to get back to work. So when I reread it, Andy, it jumped at me how confident I was, you know, 8 or 9 years ago when I first started to write it. And then again, when it released, it came out when I was at my lowest point. How's that?
Wow. Well, and there must have been something that prompted you to write this to begin with, right? I mean, you know, what was the, did you have an epiphany or was it something that evolved over time or?
Well, it was a couple of things. I mean, anytime you write, you get what I call those divine downloads. You also have some ideas of what's current and relevant when you're in that space and time. I mean, we would just come out of the Great Recession at the end of 2008. So when I started to start the third book, beginning of 2009 into early 2010, the global market, in particular the U.S., was still in the tank. And it's interesting now as we record this interview, you and I today, how times have changed. The economy is doing a lot better. You know, companies are making money literally in spite of themselves because the economy is doing better. So this was almost a manifesto. Say, look, we are having some struggles. I come from Michigan when I wrote the book, which started the recession. We went in first because we were so automotively tied in. So we slowed down about a year before 2008. I just thought, you know what? We faced adversity. We're tough. We know how to hustle. We know how to innovate. Now we have to really dust it off and get back to work. So it was a little bit revolutionary from the thought process that, you know, I was full of all this bravado. And, you know, being younger, and, you know, in my mid-30s when I wrote, and now I'm 45, you look back and go, wow, it's interesting how you look at your life changes, how you view the world, aka your worldview, how you look at your own economy in situations you were in. I didn't know, Andy, that a year, year and a half later, I'd be going through a divorce. And it doesn't mean that I was naive to that, but that's a huge change, especially when you have three pre-teenagers going through that, and you've got a business to run, you're trying to speak and be on the road. So it's almost like that book got quickly shelved, and I wasn't in the right space of mind for a year or two during and after the divorce to really go back and revisit the book. So it's one of those things that, you know, I look at it and people say, why should I read it? To me, motivation never goes out of style. And some people like to, you know, knock on it. There's Saturday Night Live skits about it, Geico commercials that rip on motivational speakers. And hell, I got to be honest, I laugh at them too. But here's the big deal, though. People always need to have that checkup from the neck up, as Zig Ziglar taught many of us in the industry. And it never goes out of style. There's always new groups of people that have never been around personal development, which absolutely floors me, Andy. What we take for granted with this knowledge, people have never been exposed to. So for me, it's one of those things that, you know, formal education is a good thing. Personal development to me is even a better thing because you're investing in the most important thing, which is your mind. So that's really the gist of the book, almost like a mental vitamin or a 2x4 to the brain.
Now, I know firsthand that you walked the talk in this next topic because it took us three tries to get this interview because of technical problems, but persistence is what it's all about. And you talk about that in the book, about how powerful it is. And why is that? What do you suppose, you know, is the generator behind that?
Well, life is not easy. And I think as I've gotten a little bit older, Andy, and you and I have been in the industry for many, many years collectively, you're going to face adversity. Society is not going to roll the red carpet out and welcome you to every idea. Not every person you call upon, if you're in sales, is going to say, oh, yes, let's take your proposal. Let's pay full price and let's not negotiate. You know, it doesn't work that way. So I think as we get older, our fear factor starts to increase that when we hear the word no or someone laughs at our idea, and typically, Andy, you know this, it's people closest to us sometimes that have great intentions, but their intentions hold us back. They make us play it safe, and we lose that ability to ask, A-S-K. And I'm a big believer that in persistence, you don't get unless you ask. Now, Andy, this stuff has been around for thousands of years. You go look at all the great religions, all the great books that have been written on spirituality from the Bible. You know, they all say the same thing. The technology changes. You and I are communicating on a phone, you know, a couple thousand miles away on the eve of a holiday. That in itself is a miracle. Okay. The internet, we were going to do a live video conference. That was down, but we have multiple ways to communicate. The core things never change. How you persist when the technology changes, when you hear the word no, you kind of say, I'm just going to quit, or we say, let's rethink the idea. Let's go back, retool it, and then represent it again. I do a lot of sales training over the world, and the best salespeople I find do several things that are kind of unique. There's a pattern. One of the core things they all possess is persistence. They don't hear no. Matter of fact, some go, yeah, I expect people to say no because we're trained to say no because we hate sales. However, if you circle back again and again, you reposition the offer. Maybe it's a different space and time. The buyer's ready. Maybe it's the not right time for them or you. Many times you can bust through, not by hard selling anybody, but just showing up time and time again. So to me, persistence is the lost art. I have an entire chapter on it, and I give some examples of why it's important to do it. You look at history, Andy. You've interviewed some of the great minds on your show, and they're all very persistent. You know, I say, look, the 10,000 no's equal a few hundred yeses, which equals successful business or sales career. But you got to get through all those thousands of no's first. That's called persistence.
Yeah, and if you look at it from the standpoint of every no is gets you one step closer to a yes, that's one way of you know, putting a positive spin on mm-hmm. the rejection aspect of it, which nobody likes. So,
no.
and also, you know, just to dovetail a little bit, the entrepreneurial mindset, I think, is all about persistence. I mean, you know, you're against all odds and facing adversity. If an idea fails, you just try another one or you try the same idea in a different way or whatever. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely. And here's what's fascinating, Andy, it's a great question, is children, when we're young, we do this already. It's built into our DNA. Let me give an example. We learn to slowly crawl, then we crawl in and we start to stand, and then we start to fall down and stumble before we're starting to walk. Imagine if every 10 or 11 month old said, damn it, I can't stand up. I'm just going to crawl the rest of my life.
Right.
You know, after hundreds of falls, sometimes they're painful. That little toddler begins to stand. They get more confidence. They fall a few more times. They start to walk 2 steps, 4 steps, and they walk across the room. That takes a great amount of persistence and the ability to kind of pick yourself up and try things over and over again. Look at education. Most of our listeners have probably gone through high school. Some have probably gone into college. Maybe some have gone to an MBA or a doctorate. That's all about persistence. And not only that, not quitting and giving up, because you have to take tests. You have to study. Some tests you fail. Some tests you pass. So we're conditioned to do this. The challenge is we get in the workplace, and many times we take other people's opinions personally. And we say, you know what? They said this wouldn't work, and I'm going to quit. But entrepreneurs, which we all have in our DNA, are much more prone to say, look, that's part of the game. You've got to get through a lot of those no's, as we mentioned, to get to the yeses. Also, you said something a second ago, Andy, I want to rewind a little bit here and go back to. What I call any type of failure, I learned this in direct marketing, we call it testing. So if you want to reframe it, there is really no such thing as failure. Any situation is going to teach you lessons. It's basically a testing process. I've had some presentations I thought I was going to win with different companies. I lose it. The next time I represent that same type of information again, many times I will win the presentation because I learn what they liked and what they didn't like from the first experience or the different client. You're always getting feedback. You're testing. So to me, life is always teaching you, regardless of a yes or no, how to improve. And not only that, how to plus it and get stronger if you're looking at it from that perspective.
Oh, I love that. So let's talk about the 7 valuable ways to connect with virtually anyone you meet. You talk about this in the book. Can you kind of run those down for us? I know you probably don't want to give away everything in the book, but why are they, the 7? I mean, there's probably other ways, but, you know, what's important about these 7 ways? Can you kind of, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, I'll share a few with our audience. I want to make sure we drill a little deeper versus just kind of thumbing through them all real fast. But to me, you have to be able to connect with people quickly. In traditional sales, we call that, how do you build rapport? One of your most recent guests, Ben Gay III, who I've interviewed and he's spoken at my events, he calls it, how do you infiltrate, or sales infiltration? And having been around Ben, I got to tell you, Andy, he's one of the best salespeople I've ever met. The guy can charm anybody. You know that.
Yeah.
And what Ben taught me, amongst many of their masters and in my own life experience, is a few things. Number one, how good are you at listening? And it's interesting because I'm being interviewed. I'm doing a lot of the talking. But when I interview guests, when the microphone's flipped around, the best interviews come when I ask a few strategic questions and just simply listen. And it's a lost art. Most of us are trained to get our ideas out there. We're very excited. We're passionate. However, if you're meeting with someone to try to present what you're thinking might be a fit or potentially not, the best salespeople that connect quickly or infiltrate, as Ben would say, know how to listen at a very, very high level. There's active listening where you nod, you move along. I mean, there's different classes you can take, from Toastmasters to Dale Carnegie. You can read books and watch TED Talks. Your best listeners ask great questions. They take notes. Many times they'll recap back what they heard to the person that they're listening to acknowledge that, hey, Andy, I'll say this. The 2 biggest gifts that we can give anybody are the gifts of time and attention. Let me repeat that. time and attention are the two biggest gifts you can give anybody, especially in a sped up ADD digital world. My whole thing, and you've been around the mind capture world, I think for about 10, 12 years, Andy, is how do you get attention? If you can't get attention, the best product, service, idea, venture capital, fundraising technique, it's going to fail because people just aren't going to pay any attention to it. So to me, some of these are very much Andy common sense. You have to listen. It's a lost art. A couple other quick ways to connect with anybody you meet. Do your homework. This is easier than ever. I'll be a little controversial here. In the age of Google, ignorance is no longer an excuse.
Right.
You can find anything online in 5 or 10 minutes. Does not mean it's the full picture, that it's all 100% accurate. However, someone's LinkedIn profile, their Facebook page, their blog, their web pages, their social media, you can find out a lot about somebody in 5 or 10 minutes Googling their company, their name, or their industry. So to me, before you meet with someone, do your homework. Before I agreed to be interviewed by again, I went and looked at Audio Motivation, looked at your webpage. I saw some of your guests. I saw you've had Larry Wingan on here, Tony Alessandra, Ben Gay III. I saw your guys' content up there, and it's been a couple years, but it reminded me, do your homework before you go on to a show or you talk with people. It's, again, those gifts of time and attention. A couple other quick ways is get into someone's mind. Now, this may sound a little heavy. Let me explain here. Frankly, if you look at getting into someone's mind, is find out what are their big challenges. What keeps them up at night, as Dan Kennedy taught me, the great direct marketing legend. You know, what are those conversations at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning? They're like, oh my gosh, you've gotten into my head. Or, oh my goodness, you're like a fly on the wall at my office. And how you do that is by asking great questions. That also ties in your listening. But getting into their mind, you make the whole presentation about them. So they go, oh my goodness, wow, this is a great idea. But at the end of the meeting, Andy, the best salespeople, they help you co-create what you're going to buy or sell from them because they make it about you. They flip it around. They don't try to push something. They try to find out more about you. Then they try to find a match. Then they co-create the product or service offering to fit what you seek out. And that's a big shift from what a lot of people think about traditional salespeople. And, you know, a couple other quick things I'll share with your audience. Share success stories. People learn by stories. Seth Godin, one of my heroes, I've interviewed him for my 4th book. I've talked to him many, many times. I'm a big fan of his work. He used to say in one of his book titles, Andy, all marketers are liars. He went and updated that version of that book and retitled it All Marketers Are / Storytellers. That's the age that we're in. We're in the age of YouTube videos, sound bites, Snapchat, TED Talks. TED Talks are 12 to 18 minutes of pure gold, but they're short stories. They're no longer the hour or 2 hours, which is very hard to get. So share stories because, again, people remember the stories. Okay. And a final tip, and again, these aren't real rocket science type applications, but they work. That's what I'm concerned with, is when you tie these together, do they work effectively? Is be brief with people. Again, we're in the age of sound bites. Everything has a 24-hour news cycle. You got to be quick. I call it promise speed. Okay, our interview today, someone might tune in for 10, 15 minutes. They might listen to the whole podcast. But in that time, we've got to imagine right now that they're ready to hit another button. They're ready to switch away. There's a phone vibrating. Someone just walked in their office. An email is popping up. Their child is Snapchatting them. Life comes crashing in. So we've got to work quickly. We've got to make it relevant and much more hard hitting than any point in history because the attention spans are so short. So I gave the global audience here a few ideas. Again, if you use these in concert, and again, there's a little bit more homework here. You tie in those and some other strategies from their book, you have a much higher chance at connecting quickly and making yourself more relevant and able to stand out.
Oh, man, that's just that's an avalanche of good stuff there, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, I tried to do that with the podcast, too, because I don't like to have shows that run longer than 25 or 30 minutes because of people's attention spans. And, you know, and like you said, I mean, things are constantly vying for their attention out there. So
Correct. So
I'm glad you touched on that. Now, I want to delve into a little bit of the option-based thinking that you talk about. And it's you put it in the same kind of frame of reference as positive thinking, of course. And but tell me about the option-based thinking concept, because I it's fascinating.
Well, there's the old adage or quote that says, in time of peace, prepare for war. Now, I'm not advocating military action here. Here's the point that I want to parallel over. When things are going well in your business, I'm a big believer that you have multiple options to be prepared. What if you lose a big customer? What if you gain another big customer via referral? How do you scale and grow and hire people to accommodate the capacity problem you have now to your advantage? And entrepreneurs, after a while of doing this, sort of that testing forward, or as John Maxwell says, failing forward, it becomes very much in our DNA that, oh my God, if the shit hits the fan, Andy, and we have adult listeners here, what are you going to do? I've been out on my own for almost 13 years. I've ridden economies that have been booming. I've been through great recessions. I've been, you know, made it through a divorce. I've made it through moves, all sorts of crazy. And through all those points of adversity and points of a good economy, you learn to think about options. And let me share with the audience a couple of my favorite techniques that may be of value to them, okay? This is going to sound old school, but always carry a pen and paper or post-it notes with you. Here's why. Now, again, I'm a writer, so I'm always capturing ideas. I've also switched over where my phone now, I can talk into my phone into notes and save it as a note. But paper and pen, somehow magically, and again, Brian Tracy's influenced me on this, Dan Kennedy and a couple of my other copywriting mentors, is when you write things down, it does something to kinesthetically lock in the idea. There's a higher chance you won't forget it because you've anchored it down to paper. And this may sound odd to some of our audience. Most of my books are written via hand, then I move them over to Word documents. I write them into notebooks or different scrap paper or notes or files that go under a new book. I can write much faster physically with a pen and paper than I can type. So there's a little writing technique there that even a lot of great copywriters won't tell you, that when you're at a keyboard, many of the old school masters will hunt and peck and stop and start to edit. That kills the idea flow. So I'm a big believer, old school, and I've seen this with millennials that I've trained in live seminars and keynotes and breakouts. I said, look, everyone put your phone down. There's pen and paper in front of you. I know this is ancient, and I hold up a pen, and the millennials usually start cracking up. I'm like, we're going to write. Now, some of you are going to doodle and draw pictures. That's fine, but I want you to write ideas because you can capture them. Now, that's the first clue. Option-based thinking is, how do you have, if something goes right or wrong, four or five options? What's option B, option C, option D? It's called your checkoff. Another area where you see this happening is watching a football game. Now, Andy, I think you're a Buffalo Bills fan. Is this correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, I'm a Detroit Lions fan, so we can cry over our beers. At least you guys have made it to a Super Bowl multiple times under quarterback Jim Kelly. But the Lions have never made a Super Bowl. But when I actually watch our favorite team, yours is the Bills, mine's the Lions, I watch our quarterback, Matt Stafford. He'll go up to the line. Now visualize this. He's underneath, you know, a huge man that's about 6'5", 300, and he looks left to right, scanning the field for options. And if he sees an option that he likes, he calls an audible, which is a change right there at the line of scrimmage. Right in the middle of the play before he calls the hut, he changes the play. He does checkoffs. Option A is look to the left. Option B, maybe it's tight end. Option C, what's the formation of the linebacker? Option D, look right. Is there an open man or a one-on-one? And he'll check off his options. So you see it done all around you. Entrepreneurs don't always have to think in real time, you know, when there's, you know, 10 guys wanting to kill you on the other side of the ball. But you've got to be thinking, what if we lose a customer? How do we gain more customers? How do we get more referrals? What options do you have to build revenue? Or on the flip side, what are options you have to cut costs? Because there's only two things a business can do. Number one, generate more profits and more customers, repeat business. That's the number one focal point. Or number two, the business can plug leaks and cut costs, contain costs. After a while, you can't cut your way to savings too much where you can make a profit. There comes a point where you have to increase your profits, bottom line. But those are the two core functions. So to me, in the book, I give a couple more ways to look at it when you look at option-based thinking. But I'll give you one, your listeners, one more quick tip here. Get around people that are smarter than you. It could be books. It could be YouTube videos. It could be a seminar that you go to, a Chamber of Commerce event. Join in a mastermind group, online or offline. Some are paid, some are free. Listening to podcasts like this. You know, I have people that listen to my interviews of other experts or trailblazers, I call them. And you can get in the mind of someone basically just with a gift of your attention and time. And they'll tell you things that can save you years of frustration if you bring an open mind. So those are a few of my favorite. Again, in the book, we have more, but I want to give a couple quick nuggets a little deeper for your audience.
Yeah, thank you. And speaking of the book, tell us how to get it, because I'm sure the people listening are like, okay, I got to get this book. So where can we go?
Really easy. This book, the anniversary edition, we have some bonuses. It's going to be available only through my site, which is mindcapturegroup.com. So again, go to mindcapturegroup.com. You click on the tab marked books. You'll see the picture with it, and the subtitle is How to Awaken Your Entrepreneurial Genius in a Time of Great Economic Change. It has a light bulb on the cover, and if you click on that, there's some great bonuses that we have available to mail out with the book. So we're doing that for a couple reasons. Number one, we didn't want to relaunch the book on Amazon to confuse people. You don't want to confuse customers, Andy.
That's
and
right.
Secondly, we're getting ready to relaunch the fourth book next summer, as you mentioned in the introduction. So this is kind of a micro launch, as we call marketing, where we want to make sure that people can come directly to the site and that we give them the bonuses. And also with the original version out there from 7 or 8 years ago, I do not want them to order that one.
Right,
not that
right.
I'm embarrassed by the book, but the cover on it is atrocious. And I want them to get the new souped up revised version and then give them some bonuses and some freebies since they went to the site. So that's where you get the book.
Mindcapturegroup.com is where to go, folks. So, Tony Wroblewski, thanks so much. This has been just a tons of great stuff that you're giving us here. And I want everybody to go and get the book and then report back to me. And
awesome.
Tony, I'd love to have you back on, too, at some point, because, this really we're just scratching the surface with all this.
Well, Andy, I'd be honored. Thank you again for your time and our persistence to get this. And we will stay in touch because next summer we've got another book coming out. And you always do a good job of interviewing and you do your homework. So I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Audio Motivation. Join us in our membership community for even more in-depth interviews, transcripts, and bonus gifts, all designed to keep you motivated and inspired.